This week on RSVB Update, RuneScape has arrived on Steam, and we discuss what it means for the future. Also, Clue Scrolls receive ninja attention, but the biggest update for us is the surprise launch of interface scaling, one of RuneScape's biggest accessibility features. This is RSVB Update, episode 799, recorded Thursday, October 15th, 2020. Now you see it. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVB Update. Just Tannis and myself here this week. And it's been a while since we've done one of these duo episodes, eh?
Yeah, it's been a while, man. It's been a while. I've had a lot of guests lately. Been busy.
And a lot of updates.
And a lot of updates, yeah. And that's not stopping.
And I just, you know, remind everybody to compare and contrast this to what we saw last year in the lead up to RuneFest. Very quiet. Whereas, you know, it hasn't been that way this year. And like you said, the pace is just going to keep picking up. Orthon is coming next week. We have Steam this week and a Ninja Strike, amongst other things. And, of course, interface scaling. And we're going to talk about all of that.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Can't wait.
And, you know, it's a good accessibility update, but we'll go into the pros and cons of it, when you might want to use it, when you might not want to use it, that sort of thing. But if you're joining us for the first time, this is RSVB Update. You can find full show notes at update.rsvb.com. I am Shane12088 in game, and he is Tannis79. And we're going to start off with what everybody, of course, wants to talk about, and that is RuneScape's Steam launch, because, you know, this is a big deal. This is something that has the potential, I think, to change the trajectory that this game is on. Because
CFD.
Yeah, it's effectively like the Miniclip launch in 2005, where RuneScape was brought to an entirely new audience of people, and those people became RuneScape players and form the base of what became RuneScape going into the mid-2000s and whatnot. But, of course, RuneScape is now on Steam. You can find it on the Steam store. And if you actually go to the front page of Steam, and I don't know if it'll be like this, or I guess it was only a one-day thing, but on the day of, they occupied the masthead on Steam, and they're still the first featured and recommended game on the front of Steam itself. So anybody who was going to Steam would have seen RuneScape yesterday. And, you know, this is a massive amount of exposure for the game. And, you know, I think it opens up an entirely new ball game on that. But I don't know. What do you think?
Well, see, I noticed that, and I wasn't sure if that had been, like, tailored to me because I had it on the wish list.
Right.
Or what, but no, I saw that too, and I thought, oh, this is good. The other thing I noticed when I went there was that I thought it looked pretty put together. I thought it looked a little better than the last time we checked in on it. I was surprised to see what the numbers were already when it came to the reviews. It was already getting a lot of traffic there. So,
yeah, and I think they peaked at around 9,500 players on Steam on the first day.
Yeah, so that was real. I mean, that was real cool. And then of course, you know, you got to go and check your achievements and see if what they put in there. You know,
20 Steam achievements.
And I want to say these have to be like an early batch, right? Because they are all very well, not all, but mostly early. Gameplay stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of the feeling I got.
Right, because, you know, you're not gonna effectively just launch with this many. But they're fairly basic ones, and if you had them already done in game, it will just grant them to you. Their achievements for unlocking some of the lodestones, completing the Lumbridge beginner, medium, and hard tasks, choose a kitten from Gertrude in terms of its color. Claim an anti-dragon shield from the Duke of Lumbridge. Complete a sinkhole Climb to the top of the White Knight's castle and see all there is to see. Complete 10 clue scrolls. Defeat 6 or 7 of the Barrows brothers and claim their loot 5 times over. Gain access to Menaphos. Step inside the portal at the clan camp and go to the clan citadel. Craft nature runes. Solve the Embrace the Chaos mystery within the Infernal Source archaeology site. Travel to the Ark, unlock the Prif Lodestone, and get the highest level in a skill and get level 99. And the only one I haven't done is Who's the Boss? Kill 1,000 RuneScape bosses.
Okay, yeah, I was left out on the clue scroll. I have 0 of 10. big goose egg.
Yeah. And here's some interesting numbers on this. And this is actually, this would actually be good to see more RuneScape Steam achievements come in. Because, you know, on Steam, you can actually see the percentage of players who have completed this. 64% of players have unlocked the Berthorpe Lodestone. 32% the Lumbridge Lodestone. 16.2% have claimed the Anti-Dragon Shield. And the one that has completed the least is Travel to the Ark and visit 50 Uncharted Isles, 3.9%. So these aren't...
trying to remember.
So it's not just people like you and myself that are completing these, completing 19 out of 20 or 20 out of 20 on the run. You are having people with a wide breadth of RuneScape experience completing these to the point where you have people who, you know, haven't visited the Ark or haven't even completed the unlocking of some of the lodestones out there. So it's working for what it's designed to do.
It does. Now, I am curious how this is. Okay, so like those are some of those achievements, like the Ark. Take the Ark in particular. That's something that's not available to free to play. But for instance, it's a free to play game through Steam. You know what I'm saying? So like, how does that hash out? Because of course, anything that's going to be members would have a lower percentage, right?
Yeah, yeah. And with that, I don't exactly know what that would be. And you know, I think it provides a tremendous amount of room for growth too on that.
Oh, definitely. I this is huge, man. This is huge, and I think it only see something I'm really excited about this week is the next update we're going to talk about. But I don't see the Steam launch happening in the same way without the additions that we got this week.
Yeah, and we'll get to what those are.
Yeah, I mean, it just... I'm excited about it. And did you notice what they had on offering?
Some membership packages?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then there was like a max packet or bundle.
Yeah.
And then... I don't know what the big bundle was.
We can go through those right now. If you wanted to buy all the DLC, it would be upwards of $200 Canadian. The starter pack contains 1 month of membership, the Forge Goblin Warhammer, and 15 Treasure Hunter keys. The next one is called the Standard Pack, which includes 3 months of membership, the Forge Goblin male and female outfit, 50 Treasure Hunter keys, and the RuneScape soundtrack, the orchestral collection. And then after that, you have the Max Pack, which includes 12 months of membership, the Forge Goblin male and female outfit, the Forge Goblin Warhammer from the starter pack, the Forge Goblin pet mechanical frog, a pet mechanical frog, I repeat, 50 bank spaces. Yeah, 75 treasure hunter keys, cosmetic tokens times 2, which of course we know in game as our keepsake tokens, extra daily treasure hunter keys, and the soundtrack as well. And for anybody wondering, you will be able to, at some point in the future, purchase all of these packs, or rather purchase the cosmetics in-game at some point in the future, so you don't have to buy it on Steam. But, you know, one thing that I actually want to talk about with this is the community hub that exists, because, you know, there's a forum, there's a clan recruitment forum, there's also a place for screenshots, artwork, broadcasts, and videos there.
That's right.
You can sort by most popular week, most popular today. And one of the things that we're actually going to be doing with this is that we're actually going to be posting the YouTube versions of the podcast into this channel here. And we'll see if we can pull some more traction on that. And I mean, it's certainly, I think, an interesting content discovery area, because if you just look at what is here for the videos, RSPB update would fit quite well on this. So that's one thing that I'm actually interested in.
Maybe we can have a alternative to the other places that are like forums and where people
can share. I mean the Steam discussion forum is pretty active, and you know, if you scroll down to the first page of posts, that's 40 minutes. If you scroll down to the second page of posts, that's 2 hours ago. So I mean, it's not completely dead. It's actually very active, which is a good thing. I think the account linking process was simple. You know, you just link it to Steam, it downloads, and when you log in with the Steam client, you say, would you like to either create a new account or would you like to use an existing one? And when you sign in, your account is linked. There's a whole FAQ if you want to unlink for some reason as well. And, you know, I just want to talk a bit about what this means for the future. And I did this, and I wrote this out in an opinion piece on informer.rsbnb.com. But what I think that this comes down to is being a critical part of the growth strategy for RuneScape. And we know that that is the truth. That's what Maude Warden told us, and what has been brought out numerous times anytime it was talked about that RS was coming to Steam. And the benefit that we get from this is that it can be combined with mobile whenever that releases in 2021 to be a 1-2 punch that's similar to what Miniclip did for the game in the mid-2000s. It will bring in, hopefully, a new influx of players, and with this, we'll get a new influx of community builders and content creators. And this is how you evolve a community. And this is so important, because we know that from past metrics that have been shown at RuneFest and other areas, that a good chunk of the players are mid to high level. And this is fine, but it's also focused the game, based on the metrics and previously player voting, on some of the best received high level player updates. These are things like your Priftinus, these are things like Telos, the Elite Dungeon Trilogy, and I could go on and on, the player owned farm. These are all examples of this, of lightning striking and updates really capturing and motivating the player base. And when you look at this list of updates, and I listed them all in the article, and some of our favorite ones are there, like the Clue Scroll rework, initial deep sea fishing, safe cracking, player owned farm, needle skips, elite dungeons, and then Anachronia leads us into archaeology. And what we see with that, and keep in mind you're potentially going to have a new influx of players coming in, and then when you combine that with the branding and packaging that we've seen of all the 2020 releases, which is what a Steam game thrives on, frequent updates and headline releases, this month-to-month release strategy is exactly what's required. And what will hopefully follow from this potential Steam influx of users and the modern release strategy is a collection of updates in the next year or so that supercharge the mid-level game experience. And with that, you know, you have to ask, like, we have such a rich experience at level 99, whether it be maxing or going for 120s or going for one of the completion escapes or just PVMing. There's choices to be made there, and we need more, but the mid-level of the game doesn't have that breadth. Now, the big question that I think comes from all this is whether or not Steam will actually bring in these new players. The other option, of course, is that Steam could just serve as a destination primarily for those who play. And if the Steam strategy is successful at bringing new players in, that same strategy can then be applied to the iOS and Android launches later on, and later potentially other storefronts. So with this, you then have a RuneScape that would become a game that is continually expanding its player base. Where if you didn't do this, and or if the Steam strategy wasn't successful, you'd end up with a more insular game, focusing on its high-level players and diehard fans. And yes, this is a viable strategy, but it's not a viable strategy for growth. And that's the big elephant in the room that nobody has really talked about in the community, is that 20 years on, we're dealing with a game that is positioned for a period of growth that's not been seen since 2005 or so. And with that, this is the story that players should be aware of at the end of the day, and why I think Steam is important going forward. But it's only going to be possible if these regular content releases that we have happening continue, and if Jagex is able to tap these new storefronts for an influx of players over the next year or so. And quite honestly, this is all going to answer the question in 2021 of what RuneScape stands for at 20 years old, and whether or not this community can still grow, whether or not this Steam launch succeeds.
And, I mean, I guess that's a big question. When I think about the Steam launch in that regard, though, RuneScape, like, I don't see a lot of, like, advertisements like that. I don't see a lot of that stuff. Maybe I'm not the targeted demographic. But regardless, it's not something that I'm sure you can think back, Shane. You probably ran into people that played RuneScape. You didn't even know it for a long time. It's kind of like Fight Club, right? First rule of RuneScape is we don't really talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay. But on Steam, you know, there's games that I find on Steam that are like 6, 7, 8 years old, or I just missed. I didn't see it. I'll still give it a shot. And it's a great game. I think we're going to see a lot of that with RuneScape. There's a lot of people that haven't even been introduced to it. And when you're talking about like these monthly updates, the good thing about that on a Steam platform is that puts you in that little row. You know, if you scroll down just a little bit, it says recently updated. Mm-hmm. You're always going to be on that front page.
That's exactly why. And I mean, if you could do that twice a month, that's even better, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And that's what I was, that's what I was getting at on that, is because you can have a game, and you can have a game that tailors its content as a love letter to its fans, focuses on existing users and existing players, and builds content around them. And we saw that. We saw Jagex do that. That was one of their content strategies that has brought out, you know, some of the updates that I talk about in this article. But it's not a strategy for growing RuneScape out. And then you're left with the question, what if, you know, there's a decision that needs to be made someday? That's that decision about, you know, I don't know what it would be, but let's just say it's like the, you know, the old EOC thing that splits the community again. What if you did something like that and you split the current community in half? You would, you know, literally decimate what was left. And that's why it's so important, I think, to pursue a growth strategy. Because if you don't, then you're effectively not looking for who those next members are going to be. You're just content with everybody who's played over the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, but you're always the little Dutch boy putting his fingers in a dike, too. You know, you're always trying to stop the outflow and not get anybody in.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, that's why we need to see over the next couple months or so, as it earns its place on Steam, we need to see if the membership numbers will increase and the daily player numbers will increase. And, you know, just, you know, a couple days in, that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, well, I think right now, this is all the early adopters. This is all of us that are, you know, like, know about it. It takes time to be discoverable, right? I mean, you got to... First, you got to be bored with what you're playing, and then kind of looking around and poking around. I don't think you're going to see big numbers. So I think you're going to see change over time.
Yeah. And I mean, like, if we look at the misplaced items player graph, you know, if you look at October 13th and Monday, and then you look at the Steam launch day, previously, you know, we were hovering just under 40,000. And after the Steam launch, we've bent it up to around 40, 42,000, 44,000. So with that. You know, we'll see if that continues, and we'll see what that looks like over time. And I mean, if you extrapolate that out for the averages, you can see that that number was at around 47,000 when archaeology launched in the start of April, and then it started to peter down since then. But the numbers that we have are still higher than what we had before archaeology, and we'll have to see what that does for Steam, of course.
So. Yeah, and I feel like those numbers are going to be real hard to understand and peel apart because, yeah, archaeology dropped in literally a perfect storm. I mean, the whole world was sitting on the couch going, what do we do now? And archaeology hit, and it was like, sweet! Let's grind this new skill.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know if you feel like I do, but I just have this. My intuition is that like Steam is better for RS3. Like it will be better for RS3 than it is for old school. I feel like it's a better presentation. Whereas like old school worked real well on Twitch, whereas RS3 didn't work as well.
Yeah,
I think this is the exact opposite.
Yeah,
when it comes to Steam.
Yeah, and I mean the game actually looks the part, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the main reason. Yeah,
and just some stats before we move on, in terms of where RS actually sits in terms of the users concurrently on Steam, current players on Steam on RS on Steam client is 8,800 or so, for a max peak of 10,500. This makes it more powerful than Stellaris, Counter-Strike, Paladins, Elite Dangerous, Halo, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Tabletop Simulator, Satisfactory, Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Oh,
yeah.
Snap. Yeah, coming in some...
And some things on the other side that it is slightly less popular than are EU4, Europa Universalis 4, Red Dead Redemption 2, Factorio, 7 Days to Die. And that's about a swing of 3,000 or 4,000 in either direction. Oh, and the Elder Scrolls 5 Skyrim Edition is 13.8K, whereas RS is at 8,800. So about a swing of 5,000 in either direction. So that's where we're sitting right now.
Respectable.
Yeah, it's respectable because I don't think you'd be beating Elder Scrolls 5 Skyrim. And no. I think it's also interesting that there's more RuneScape players than there are Counter-Strike players on Steam currently. And Elite Dangerous, too. So there's that.
Yeah, that kind of tickles me a little bit.
Whereas right now, you know, the most popular games on Steam at this moment, the top five are Counter-Strike Global Offensive, Dota 2, Among Us, Team Fortress 2, and Rocket League.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. And then it goes down from there. So I think it's a very, very respectable showing. But let's, of course, talk about the update of the week because, like you said, that made what we have on Steam actually possible. Full Informer article can be found at informer.rsbnb.com or linked in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. But we also do have a ninja strike this week for Clue Scrolls, and this one kind of surprised me because I thought, you know, Clue Scrolls as they are feel kind of well rounded, don't they?
Yeah,
at least
you know,
from my
the
perspective.
Well, it was the Clue Scroll rework that we got right after the first Mayan Smithing beta. I really thought put Clue Scrolls in a really good place.
Yeah.
And then we have had some touches around the edges. With things utilizing, you know, more and more fortunate components and stuff that has kept them strong, I felt.
Yeah, and I think that's a good economy, and we owe Mod Timbo that. So we got some new Clue titles. Tier Easy will be the Gold Digger title. Unlock all the easy Clue Scroll items. The Clueless title will be for Medium, unlocking all items again. On the hard tier, the title is Double Agent. You could be Double Agent Tana 79.
Oh.
Any cape slot item plus any piece of third age equipment plus one of either the barrows or shadow dies plus all other uniques including masks. Wow. And then there's a gold requirement to unlock all items for that one as well, which is, woo!
Yeah, good luck with that.
You know what really annoys me with this is that I once upon a time, about 10 years ago, got a third age item.
Really?
So I would have had this requirement ticked off.
Oh, man, if you had only held on to it. But you needed the money, didn't you, Shane? You needed it.
Yeah, I funded 99 farming with it.
I was going to say, you had to go put something in the ground.
The elite will be the Clue Chaser, which is any cape slot item plus any piece of third age druidic equipment plus any die plus all other uniques, including masks and god bows. And, of course, the gold requirement is all items. The master tier is Master of All Clues, which is any cape slot item, any piece of second age equipment, every type of die, and all other uniques, including masks and glasses. Then the golden title on this one is all capes, one piece of each second age style armor, plus what? Orlando Smith's hat, plus all other uniques.
Oh, well, at least that's it. Dude, who's going to have like all that? Wow.
I don't know.
Man, if you had all that, just think of all the money you would
yeah.
have. How many clues would you have to do to have all that? Insane.
I don't know. They also updated the Zyda's reward shop. There's now a clue capacity upgrade, which increases the cap on stored clues from 25 to 50. This costs 750 points. You can also purchase a Way of the Foot-shaped key, which is an ancient technique that allows you to complete medium clue scroll steps that normally require a key without one for 500 points. There's no longer a cap on how many master clues you can obtain and hold at any one time. This also applies to elite clues that upgrade to master clues. Scrolls and caskets obtained from various places will go directly into Charos' clue carrier, regardless of whether or not your backpack is full. And caskets can no longer be opened with fewer than 9 combined free spaces in the bank and backpack. That's good. I really like the one about the clue carrier.
Yeah, I like the increased sizes.
Then some changes for clue scroll steps. Clues and caskets hidden in drawers, chests, and cupboards will now be opened and searched in one action. Puzzle skipping tickets will now completely finish a sliding puzzle instead of leaving the final tile incomplete. That's a bit of an odd one. The dialogue that plays when speaking to NPCs during challenge scrolls has been removed. Moving over distant spheres will now teleport you to a fixed location rather than to random locations within an area. And the Dorgishkon sphere has 4 options now to select when used, taking you either north, south, east, or west of Dorgishkon. You know, that's interesting because I find those Dorgishkon clues one of the most tedious ones to do.
Take your word for it.
Okay.
I don't go there.
Compact versions of the Amulet of Glory and Ring of Dueling can now be placed in their respective hidey holes used to complete steps. The combat training camp hidey hole has been moved closer to the Ogre Pen. Catherby Archery Store hidey hole has been moved to inside the shop. Now here's a good one. The Menaphos Grand Library Master Clue Step and Hidey Hole has been moved just outside the main door to avoid an issue where double agents could spawn in an unattackable state.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a good one. Ellis and Trader Stan's left-click options are now context-dependent, whether or not you're holding the respective clue scrolls. Stepping stone shortcuts in the Lumbered Swamp no longer force you to approach at walk speed. 2 new right-click press options, which skip the dialogue box and immediately take the player to Zanaris or into the shed have been added to the door of the Lumbered Swamp. I forgot that way to get into Zanaris. I always take it
for granted. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the scrub way, remember?
Yeah.
When we don't have all the quests done.
The key, which is required for the Varrock Dig Site Exam Center chest for medium clues, can now be dropped by both male and female barbarians. And using a sextant, either directly or through a clue scroll, will now give a coordinate reading with no delay. That's good. Now, I don't know how this works and if there's any kind of negative side effect to this, but familiar summoning pouches and summoning scrolls can now be taken to Entrena, so you'll no longer need to dismiss your meerkats when solving treasure trails there. I wonder if it's all or just the meerkats.
I would assume it's meerkats because otherwise it would be
violating that rule.
It would make it'd make that quest a lot easier.
Yeah. Good point. Forgot about that quest. Charos's clue carrier can now be filled from the bank while in the interface. Adding teleport scrolls to Globetrotter arm guards now gives you the option to add all. Easy and medium reroll tokens now match the identifying tier colors of the reward caskets, and the volume of the heartbeat audio for scan clues has been increased to make it more noticeable. I bet you didn't even know that existed.
I didn't.
Yeah. I think that's all I want to say on clue scrolls. It's just some dialogue and text changes that also happened with that as well. And, you know, I think these are pretty, I don't want to say minor, but I think they are still wholesome ninja fixes. But I felt coming in that clues were pretty good around the edges, and these kind of just, you know, make things a little bit nicer.
Yeah, I mean, these are all quality of life fixes, I guess. You know, I don't want to be too harsh because I don't do clues. So maybe some of these, you know, moving these hidey holes was a really big deal. I do like the capacity thing. But no, they were in a good place coming in, and they're in a slightly better place going out.
Yeah, I think the biggest one is the meerkats, honestly. So
yeah, it's a big one.
All right. So we got a surprise update this week.
Yeah.
Something you and I have championed a lot, and that's interface scaling.
Dude, I was taken aback. I didn't see this one coming at all. But I was so shocked. I really didn't think we'd get anything on a Steam launch week, right? I figured that would be the update. But when you think about it, it made perfect sense. So we had not too long ago, we had the beta for interface scaling, right?
Yeah.
And I just never thought that would turn around that fast. But it did, and they included font size, which I don't think that was in the original.
No, that wasn't in the original beta.
Yeah, that was different. And so, man, this is a game changer.
This is a game changer. On the accessibility front for you.
On the accessibility side. Well, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. I think this is the first time they've ever labeled anything as an accessibility feature.
Yes.
And that actually puts it in another category. Like, this is the first time. So,
accessibility, like, and readability of RuneScape were the exact words.
Yeah. And so this is something you evaluate when you're looking at the accessibility of a game. And you can't evaluate something that they don't really have, right? So, this was really exciting. Like, this is the first accessibility feature. And what makes an accessibility feature different than the other ones is that is something that helps accessibility without interacting in any way with the difficulty of a game. So that's pretty much what we have right here. But font size is something that is also something that you look at.
Yeah.
And
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, they work together really, really well. Because if you are to turn your font size, like, I turned mine all the way up, right? And then I took my magnifier off just to see where we're at. Well, it wasn't.
Is it enough?
It wasn't there. No.
Aww.
But when you put interface scaling with it, I don't need that much of a boost in my interface. I can boost my interface to like 150, 175, 200 range, at like real high range.
And then when you combine that with font scaling, is that enough?
Then you can turn everything off. And that is the breakthrough here that I want people to take away. Like, they have made it.
You're
so
able
that
to play the game,
this game
without an accessibility third party or accessibility
yes.
aid.
Yes. Yes.
And you know, one thing that actually comes from this as well, in addition to your accessibility buffs, because, you know, being able to play the game without accessibility aids is a big deal for you. But one of the things that really factors in for me is that I play on an iMac primarily, and it has a 5K display, which upscales itself to what effectively amounts to something like 1440p. And if you look at it, it's just really hard to see the chat, and the interfaces are so small. So I can actually now play full screen on my iMac and have a relatively good experience with that. And I found that for me, 135% works well.
Okay. Nice.
And, you know, while we're on this, and, you know, we're giving this the typical RSBNB update review, it's not going to be all sunshine and roses because there are a few niggles with this. At 110%, fonts are just not readable for me.
Okay. So it's still too small?
No, I mean, the fonts become garbled. Yeah, and fuzzy.
That's weird.
I don't know if that's just the Mac client or the way it's set up, but at anywhere between 110 and 130%, the 110 and 120 options just really become rather ugly to read. 200 is really good, but my screen's not big enough for that. As with anything bigger than 200 seems good as well on that.
And I haven't tried anything under 150. So.
Right. And, you know, 135 I think is the sweet spot with that. And I'm actually able to play full screen on the iMac right now. I can show my FPS here. I'm getting 30 FPS, which I think personally is fine for me on RuneScape. I don't do bossing, so I'm fine with that.
That's cool.
As we talked about last week, there's other questions about the Mac platform. We're a lot more stable than we are now, but there's still questions about the Mac in general that I have to answer going forward. But another feature that we have with this is game render scaling, so you can actually control how in-depth your game is going to render. So what you could do if you wanted to is that, you know, if you're just running at 1080p, you could increase the game render scaling up to 200%, and in theory, you'd get better texture quality.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, like, this update
or
really had
you can
for
tune
everybody.
It down and try and
if
squeeze a few
that,
extra
right.
FPS out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, if you're on a toaster or something, you just can't do it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that is – that's one sign of just a really well-done update, because not only, like I said, is this the first accessibility feature, but it is so good for everybody, even down to, you know, you're wanting it to – your textures to be richer. I mean, that's a pretty great update. And I just want to kind of like take it back to like what some of you're talking about with readability. There's something we call the necessity of the text, right? And so like a lot of games, they might have text, it might have subtitles, but you may not really need to read it, because there's voice acting, there's sound cues, all kinds of other stuff going on, right? So it's not a necessity.
Yeah.
RuneScape has always kind of been a necessity, right? At least if you wanted to follow the story, you could kind of interact with stuff minimally by just reading, you know, instructions in the boxes. But if you are not using any assistive technology, You're not even reading those boxes. So actually making this interface scaling and the font size scaling, that changed the whole, like, the whole equation on the necessity of the text. Now you can, it's so much easier to read that it doesn't put an undue burden, which is kind of the bar that you look for. You
know? Yeah, so. And one thing that actually this opens up to in the future is that with the font scaling being a separate option, what this tells me is that at some point we're going to get an update that is going to convert more of the fonts to something that's more scalable. Because I don't know if you had a chance to do this, but if you just, you know, look at your chat box and you increase the font size of it, that font is really clear compared to the rest of the font that's in game. So what this signifies is that the rendering of the font in the chat box has been changed to a more modern system than what the rest of the game is using. And when the rest of the game moves to this system, the font that you see in the chat boxes will be as clear as everything else. And that's why I'm kind of, not ragging on the readability of the fonts outside of the chat box too hard with interface scaling, because I know this is going to change in the future, but it's just something everybody should keep an eye on.
Yeah, no, and you're totally right. I would love to see the – it's not like it's a cutesy font, but there's a little something on that font in our dialogue boxes that we just don't need. Like, I know it's supposed – I don't know. Is it supposed to add to the, like, feel or something? I don't know, but I would like to see –
I think it's a good font. Honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I like this clear in the chat box.
Oh, I thought, like, you were talking about the chat box font. Yeah, the chat box font is the one you should be modeling.
No, I'm talking about the stuff that comes up in their dialogue boxes, okay. Like when an NPC is talking to you. You know,
I'd imagine that will change. I'd imagine that will change eventually.
That is stuff I think that needs fixed.
Yeah. And you know, and I'll just say this, for anybody who has a 1080p display, you could effectively now make use of the old legacy UI if you wanted to, because there's just too much open space with that one. So if you increase your game scaling on that, the old legacy UI actually becomes usable now.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why you'd want to do that, but yeah, I guess if you got a hankering for tan, right?
Or brown. Yeah. And I mean, you could even convert the modern UI into the legacy interface skin if you wanted to. Yeah, you didn't know that exists? Yeah, you could actually make it so that the interface is brown instead of the blue one.
Really? Oh, okay.
I don't know if that'd be better for you or not, but it's an option.
I'm not going back to the dark times, Shane.
Yeah.
Don't drag me back.
Fair enough. but yeah, that's UI scaling here this week, and it makes sense to have it for Steam, I think.
It made total sense. Like, once it happened, I totally got it, but I was really, 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 really surprised. I mean, things just don't happen this fast, like, in this game. So I was really pleased. And you know what? I think it kind of shows it's one of those things. It was like, okay, hey, is it ready? It is ready. Okay.
Well, then it's because like you said, if I put it to 110%, the fonts in the skill window are not readable. So there's some issues here and there, but it's passable, I think.
Yeah, and that, I mean, and I'm sure that there was probably a trade off with that. Like, if it was going to be fuzzy, let it be fuzzy on the lighter end, right? Like, then.
Yeah. And there's actually a reason that they probably did this. Let's see. There's this thing called the Valve Hardware Survey. You familiar with that?
Is it the test for VR?
No, and it basically pulls what's happening with the hardware of everybody who uses the computer or uses Steam.
Oh, okay.
No, 65% of people on Steam use 1080p. 6% use 1440p, and 2% use 4K. But multi-monitor resolution is most common, of course, going to be 2 by 1080p with that, and then followed by the 1440p options with that. So, you know, you can see that, you know, they're aiming for 65% who use 1080p, but there's an extra 35% out there who use something else that might be higher, might be lower, that need to be accommodated for. Mm-hmm. So
that makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, it's always fun looking at these Steam hardware surveys, because the most common GPU this month is the NVIDIA GTX 1060, followed by the 1050 Ti, followed by the 1050. So, you know, you think that there's higher-end GPUs out there that people are using, but no, they're actually not the most common with that. And this is a good thing to target as well if you're building a game, too.
So. Yeah.
Just a fun little tidbit. All right, one final piece of news, and this is something everybody needs to open their ears up for as we move forward to the end of the month. So on October 26th, which is, I believe, I'm not sure what day of the week that is. I think that is, that's Monday. So from Monday, October 26th, the 4 additional action bars that were previously purchasable through Solomon's General Store are 100% free forever.
Yay.
And
yay.
With this, I just want to say that there hasn't been any official communication made yet as to what happens if you buy an action bar in the next week or so. So at this point, I would say only buy the action bar from Solomon's General Store if you actually need to. Otherwise, wait until the 26th.
Yeah.
And one thing
and
I wish...
They're expensive, too, anywhere
yeah.
they were.
One thing I wish was also included with this was bank presets.
Oh, yeah. That would be nice.
I rent mine with loyalty
points. I don't know
why...
I don't understand why they're so, like, guarded, greedily guarded.
I mean, if these are being free, why not make also the bank presets free?
Yeah, that would be.
Or
nice.
Another idea: make the bank presets unlock based on total level.
Oh, that'd be cool. That wouldn't be. Yeah, that'd be cool.
You know, starting at total level 1500, and every 200 levels, unlock an extra preset.
There you go.
And that would take you to 2,500. So, you know, by the time you max, you'd have all of them.
I mean, I'd be down with that, but I kind of like your first option better.
Yeah, just making them all free.
Just make them free.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this will come as more of the monetization methods are tried, because it just feels odd that you have to buy action bars, or you had to buy action bars, and then you have to buy presets.
And it was a really weird kind of process, and it was kind of clunky.
Yeah. Yeah.
I only did it once, and I'm like, yep, we're good. We're good. I'm not doing that again.
All right. Patch notes for this week. You can now display your client's FPS on mobile. And, you know, this is actually an interesting little tidbit. It's now a checkbox in the game options, which is good. But if you want the full developer console on mobile, you can actually just have to swipe down from the top of the screen with 3 fingers, and you'll get it on mobile. And then you get the same dev console that you have on PC, where you can type display FPS and everything else into it. But nonetheless, if you don't want to do that, the checkbox is there now. Login checks are now run to clean up any remaining older files and consolidate them into their newer stackable versions. The crystal chisel will no longer overlap with offhand weapons when held in the offhand slot. And crystal chinchampas can now be held without stretching. Yeah, we know that's always been an issue with those chinchampas, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the volume of various lunar spell sound effects has been reduced, and the volume of the heal group sound effects has also been decreased as well.
Okay.
So I think that's pretty good. And mm-hmm. when you factor that in with the interface scaling And the fact we also got the Steam launch this week, that's a pretty big week.
Yeah, this is a good week.
It's more than I was expecting.
Yeah.
We also got a live stream this week talking about the Orthon dig site, revealing more information about what is going to be on the way on Monday. They didn't go too much into any of the lore. We already detailed some of the stuff with that last week, and it can be found in the news post, which you can find linked in our show notes. But what they did this week is they went through the relics and the potions and the skilling offhands. Relics are interesting. The first one is called the Evil Bob's Cat's Paw, which is a fishing relic, and every fish that you catch will be cooked. But if you're on Evil Bob's Island, every fish that you catch will be raw. And you'll also get half the base cooking XP.
Okay.
And
it's really interesting.
Yeah, their use case for this one is that it might be useful for an Iron Man character who doesn't want to waste the time of also cooking the fish when they're fishing.
Yeah, or if you just like fishing for food, but you don't want to have to go turn around and cook.
What I'm wondering is, will this work for the combined fishing and cooking act track tasks, getting you two for the price of one?
Oh. That's a good question.
The ones that are fish or cook. Yeah, interesting. The next is Flask of Soma, which increases your base archaeology precision by 20%, but you won't gain soil when that's active.
Seems like a fair trade-off.
Yeah, I like increased precision, and you know, you can look at it in two ways. You're either increasing your precision or you're turning soil off because you want to, you know, train archaeology in the most AFK way possible. And you don't want to spend the charges on the auto screener.
Yeah.
So I can see two use cases for that one. But I think when you're excavating high-level stuff, a 20% precision boost always on is something that's actually pretty neat.
Yeah.
And the last one is the Caledonda Staff, which will note all ash or bone drops on monster death.
Oh, hell. Where was that when incense sticks came out? Oh, God. Yeah. I want one of those, please.
Yeah. The Bone Crusher will still crush as expected, as well as the Scatterer. Bone Picker will pick up noted bones, and if the player is in active urns, the active urn will take priority. That one's pretty neat. I think except for the first one, there's lots of give and take with these, which is good from a design perspective, so that's good. And they said that this Kalanda staff was one they wanted to do with the first archaeology batch, but they didn't get around to, so it's nice to see that they're following up on that.
Yeah, I'm all about the Kalanda staff. What'd you call that?
Caledonda staff, I believe it was.
Caledondas?
Yeah.
Caledondas. Sounds like Conolingus. Staff.
What is that even?
Ask Reed.
Oh boy. That bad?
Well, you should know it, Shane, but I can't repeat it on a family show.
All right. Fair enough. Nothing on Google turning up for that. Conolingus staff, you said?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm not pulling anything up on Google for that, so who knows. Potion recipes, these are going to be unlocked similar to Codex Pages and Ancient Invention, is on Stormguard, and there's five of them, as we talked about, and we didn't really know what they did. The Archaeology Potion is at level 78. It's a +3 level boost. Summoning Renewal obviously does what Prayer Renewal does, except for summoning points. The word I couldn't say last week, the holy egg overload, I'm going to go with, which is, of course, the Overload Aggression Potion and Prayer Renewal Potion all tied into one. And with other combo potions, you can start with either the three, make a combination potion, or you can have an existing Holy Overload, for example, and just add the Prayer Renewal to it.
I wonder if the Archaeology Potion stacks with the tea.
It would. It would.
With the dirt feet. Yeah. Okay.
It would.
That's, so that's a pretty significant boost. Yeah.
Then we have the Power Burst of Opportunity at 103 Herb Lore, which is a 10-second boost where your pickaxe or your mattock will do double damage or double precision.
Oh. Sweet.
And see, the thing is, it's 10 seconds only, and there's a minute cooldown, and at most you can store 4 of these in one, and you're looking at effectively only a 40-second boost here. And, you know, if you wanted to, you know, bring this for an archaeology mission for an hour or so, you'd probably need to bring 4 or 5 of them. And I don't know if people are going to use this one. Like, I think it's very powerful, but I don't know if the folks are going to use it.
It depends on the price, where the price point's at, where there's going to
be. Yeah, and we don't know. And we don't exactly know what the secondaries are on these yet. So there's that, yeah. Too. There's that, too. And then the one we were wondering about last week, the Spirit Attraction Potion. This is going to be at level 116. This one auto-collects all Saren Spirits, Fire Spirits, and Blessings of the Gods and Chronicles for 6 minutes.
Okay.
So, you know, it's an AFK enabler.
Yeah, I like that.
So you don't miss any of those pesky Saren Spirits.
Yeah, don't want to miss out on any of them big bones.
Or HSRs.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
They also detailed the skilling offhands, the Orthon Furnace Core and Artificer's Measure. The Orthon Furnace Core is focused around fire making and smithing bonuses. It'll give a core experience buff to these skills when equipped in the offhand slot. The Superheat Prayer will require no prayer points. It requires 99 smithing and 102 archaeology to make. It'll also grant a 2.5% chance to save a bar when smithing. And if the Pyromaniac or Breakdown perk occurs, that's if the Pyromaniac or Breakdown perk occurs, it'll give you that 2.5% chance to save a bar when smithing. And the Furnace Core buff that gives a 5% XP buff for 5 minutes is also there. That you have a chance of getting. You could also spawn a Forge Phoenix while fire making or smithing, which is effectively an upgraded fire spirit that will grant level 60 to level 80 items in addition to rare drops such as Onyx Dust and Phoenix Feathers. They can also give Sign of the Porters 5 and 6. So for anybody who thought that fire spirits gave trash, you get an Orthon Furnace Core, you'll be able to amp them up slightly. The Artificer's Measure is for crafting and construction. It, of course, gives a core experience buff to these skills. Once again, requires 99 crafting and 102 archaeology to make. They're focused on the Scroll of Dexterity and Scroll of Proficiency buffs from Dungeoneering, increased by 25%, 5% to 6.25%, that is. And the Artificer's bonus that it grants will grant a 0.5% XP buff stackable up to 5%, and it acts as a gem bag that allows you to store up to 100 gems.
Oh.
And it also grants a 5% chance to duplicate any item when blowing glass.
Oh. That's nice on the gems.
Yeah, how do you feel about these?
Underwhelmed?
Okay. I agree.
Yeah. Underwhelmed.
They're also non-augmentable, which, you know, was the whole point of skilling offhands when they were first talked about.
Yeah. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I think they will make their way into skilling meta.
Oh, yeah. And you're definitely going to use these if you're going for fire making or smithing or crafting or construction. No questions asked. Just for the XP buff.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, as for the peripheral type stuff, I mean,
kind of take it or leave it.
Yep, exactly. Yep, that's how I am with it.
I think we'd be having a different conversation if they were augmentable.
Yeah, I mean, I would think so.
Because that's what skilling offhands were initially designed to be about. And, you know, another concern I have with these is that it feels like, you know, they're being put into two skills that are already relatively plump with things, with maybe the exception of construction.
Yes, I agree with that as well. I mean, crafting doesn't quite have as much love, but it doesn't need it right now. I'm going to take it as a sign that something is coming with other skills.
Well, we know there's a construction update coming in November.
Right. Well, we know, yeah, but like there are other things that could have really used something.
Yeah, because this doesn't change crafting at the core.
Right.
Smithing is in a good spot. Fire making is fire making. And I think the Artificer's Measure is the one that's just a little bit kind of meh.
Yeah.
Because do you really need a gem bag that lets you store 100 gems?
I think it would be nice for, like, if you were crafting a jewelry. But otherwise, it's not really needed. But it would probably make, I mean, if you make a lot of jewelry, it would be
good. And, you know, keep in mind we're talking about this before the update is even out, before we even know what you need to make these, before you even know what collections they're a part of, before we even know, you know, what archaeology dig sites you have to go to and so on and so forth, excavation sites rather. So,
well, and if you have to have one of two archaeology, then I'm going to guess that these are going to be, it's going to have to be at least one or two, right?
Yeah. And, you know, we're kind of just doing an information dump at this point because we don't exactly know what the process is going to be. They said similar to Masterwork, but not as involved.
Okay.
So there's that too. But this is primarily the information dump, and I kind of feel iffy going into it, but we'll just wait and see to pass judgment until next week.
Pick one and get rich, my friend. Pick one and get rich.
Ah, yes, that's what you are the king of, aren't you? We also got a glimpse into the Orthon dig site on this live stream because, you know, they said that it's absolutely amazing how it looks. So we got a bit of a screenshot into the preview, and it shares, you know, the same design that we saw in Desperate Measures. So that should be fun to play around with when we get there next week. Look at it on our 200% rendering quality
game. I know. Can't wait.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Gonna be a fun one. All right. We actually have questions this week, and I've been waiting to do questions for a long time because we've just been so busy with all of the other specials that we've been covering.
Yeah. Everybody stopping by, you know.
Yeah. But before we do that, we gotta give thanks. It was actually just Thanksgiving here this past Monday, so I gave thanks already. But we're going to give thanks to our Patreon supporters.
Canada has Thanksgiving.
Yeah, we do.
But you didn't have no pilgrims?
It started based off of yours. Yeah. Early in the 1500s, absolutely. But, you know, we also got to give thanks to our Patreon supporters who make everything we do here possible. So this week, I would like to thank Andrew C., Brock H., Cameron, Christian S., Danny W., Diana, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, JW, James W., Jason S., Joe M., John P., Kyle, Mr. Ling, Nora, Rastafa, Ricky A., Samantha R., Soupfinder, Stub Eve, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you, all of you, for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And if you're wondering what all this is about, you can check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/RSBNB. You can support the podcast there for as little as a dollar a month. You'll get a mention in our show notes and early access to them. And, of course, you'll help fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, you'll get a special VIP rank on Discord, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC version of the show, in addition to everything else. And for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the clips that we use for the clip show, which in the past few weeks we've had some clips from Mod Warden. We also had a clip from Sirion talking about the Dutch Tickle, amongst other things. So that's what you gain access to as a Patreon member at that tier. But all Patreon members, of course, gain access to our monthly bit, which is our bonus show, which we'll be polling next week. You also, of course, get to join and attend the RSBNB Update Roundtable. You get to read the Inside Update blog post. This month is going to be one about producing the Mod Warden special. And, of course, there's Movie Night, which will be happening on Saturday, or has happened on Saturday by the time you're hearing this, and we watch the Hunger Games. And, of course, we also have the two new tiers that we unveiled last week at $200 a month, should we ever get there. We'll launch a line of merchandise, including T-shirts, mugs, stickers, and other things that you'll have the option to purchase as a way of showing your support of the podcast. And if you guys should ever be so crazy to kick us up to $500 a month, we will do a series of Hot Ones, which is where myself, Tannis, and maybe others will subject our taste buds to a range of spicy wings for your enjoyment. So if you want to see us suffer, get us to this tier.
It will hurt.
Yes. And you can find all of this and more at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
You know, that's far enough away that I'm not worried yet.
Yeah, well, I always worry. But then again, I have had the experience of drinking ketchup milkshakes, so I know that sometimes things happen.
And that's going to be a no-no. That's going to be a no-no. All right. Questions this week. First one from Ace's Angel. If you could pick a line to continue, which would it be and why? And I'm assuming this is a quest line.
Okay.
I'm going to let you go first, because I think the listeners probably know my answer.
This is so hard, just because, like, for 10 years, we had an automatic answer. Elves, elves, finish the elves, finish the elves. Hello, finish the elves. And then it would have been like, hey, can we find out about Menophoth? So check and check. So now what is left? I think we're in a good spot with Dragonkin. I would like to carry on the Dragon Rider, the Hannibus line.
Interesting.
I really like that. I really like him as a character. And yeah.
That's what I... Elemental Workshop. Serious. I like how siloed they are in that one area. I like that there's an aura of mystery around them that we haven't cracked. And I like that it's based entirely around puzzles.
So hard.
I know, but it's worth it in the end.
The only way I would do that is if they gave us something worthwhile at the end. You give me another elemental freaking pair of boots and I'm gonna scream. Like, oh, thanks. This is useful. Never.
If I had to pick an answer that wouldn't hurt you, I'd have to say the gnomes. Because, you know, the gnomes are left in the Fifth Age, and I feel like that we're not going to get a resolution to any of these Fifth Age quests soon.
The gnomes need some love.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Just a little bit, though. Because they're gnomes. You just need a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I could go with either the gnomes or Elemental Workshop, honestly.
Elemental Workshop keeps me up at night.
Mm-hmm.
Worrying.
Mm. Apparently the design for Elemental Workshop 6 and 7 are done.
Well,
or Elemental Workshop 5 and 6, rather.
Get ready for a screen share, buddy. I'm not doing this alone.
Oh, maybe that's the quest that's coming out, because they said it would be smaller than Desperate Measures.
Oh, Shane, come on. It's Thursday. We're going into the weekend. It's happy. Come on. I don't want to worry about that.
I'm intrigued now. Anyways, you can tell that that's one of my favorite quest lines. But thank you, Ace's Angel, for that question. Next one from Sunset Fish. I know I'm a biggie into Fashionscape, but what would you like to see added to Solomon's store? I'd like to see some overrides for the old versions of Castle Wars armor, he says. I rocked that red and blue way back when. I'd also appreciate if Jagex added the old-school Dragon Medium helmets, the one with two little horns. I remember first becoming a member and seeing them little devil helmets for the first time. That's a good answer. You?
I'm trying to think.
For me, it is retro dragon weaponry. You know, 2004 era dragon longsword.
Oh, that would
And dragon dagger and mace.
That would be cool. I would like a dragon battle axe override
that we have that one, don't we?
But I want to, like, I want to use it over, like, I want to override anything with it. Like, I don't, because you can't, I mean, there's no reason to use a battle axe. But
yeah.
They look cool.
Well, so. You can put them into the essence of finality now.
Yeah, you can do that. I can't. What I do?
You know, one thing I think that we could definitely do within the future for Solomon's General Store is, you know, what if we get the graphics of the game and our character models to a point where you can effectively just monetize the hell out of outfits.
Oh, yeah.
Make it like the Overwatch skins, for example.
Yeah, I was trying to think of how close I could get to, like, a Stormtrooper or a Darth Vader outfit in Solomon's. I'd take that.
Without, of course, breaking immersion, right?
Yeah. But it's Halloween time, so we could always do it for... Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll do it for a costume. I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm really weird with cosmetics. Like, cosmetics is something, like, I don't look at and I'm like, oh, I wish I had this. It'll be something that I see that I'm like, ooh, I got it.
Yeah.
I want that.
And, you know, the fun part about that is if you see someone who has that in this day and age, you can just inspect them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I wonder if anyone's ever done that for your Elven sniper suit.
Probably, I would imagine.
But, you know, aside from that, I think I have all the ones I wanted. Like, what my goal at the end of the day is to do is to go with the old retro Sarah Doman rune-trimmed armor and the old dragon longsword.
Okay, that's cool.
That's what my goal is. And I mean, I have half of it right now already, but I'm missing the weapon.
So, yeah, you're close. See, I've got my, like, when I started playing a big, you know, the big prestige was the dragon ornamental or spiked or, you
right.
know, like, armor. And I've had that for years on Solomon's where you could do that. It's not the same.
No,
it's good.
Not.
It's not the same. And I got Prinix, I think, the old style like that.
And still, I mean, even to me, that one doesn't resonate that much.
Yeah, me neither. So,
but
I had to have it for. I needed its gloves for another outfit.
Oh, so, okay.
You know, Fashionscape, yeah. You know.
Right. let's see. Yeah, there's no old dragon cosmetic overrides. I don't think that you can get. I mean, you could take a modern dagger if you wanted to, but I mean that kind of defeats the purpose of it. But
ooh, you know, there is one thing that I would like. You know the enhanced fire cape? It's one of the sharpest capes in the whole game.
The one with the three styles, right?
Yeah, yes. And I would love to take the effect of that cape, like where it's got the fire rolling through it.
Right.
And add that to an armor. That
Ooh.
Would be so cool.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, kind of like a... Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, we have so many options now with, you know, the textures and whatnot, like we were talking about in the archaeology graphics special with Zant, that practically anything is on the table at this point for graphics and armor. It's just a question of how far they can go without breaking things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
You can already go pretty far, I mean.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's just a question of whether or not you want to get that, right? Like, there's just so many already. And I think that this is going to be a really important part of the future of RuneScape, and I'd like to see more options on this, and I'd like to see them move away from Treasure Hunter and towards more cosmetic stuff, right?
Yeah, we could do this whole, like, we could do a whole Baby Got Back campaign all about the cakes and cosmetics.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty funny. All right. I think we can move on now. But, you know, one thing that actually needs to happen is a bit of help in terms of the UI, because I was just trying to search for retro, and I can't find any retro cosmetic overrides in the customization pane, but that's a topic for another day.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sunset
Fish. I need
some
help.
Next one is from the Book of RS, Dwarven Yak Joe, who we had on the show a few weeks back with his wonderful series about pre-First Age and now the First Age of RuneScape. And he says, microtransactions aside, do you still love RuneScape? Having played for 15 years, more or less, religiously so, I'm genuinely happy with the evolution of the game and the content we have today. What about you? I feel like this is such an open ender.
Well, yeah. Nothing wrong with that, right?
Yeah. I'm in love with the community.
Okay.
And our community, I will say that.
Okay.
It was kind of touch and go for a bit after Anachronia last year, and before Anachronia last year, I feel. It was also touch and go in 2017 around the Menaphos area, because there were numerous times in that period where I personally here felt like us at the podcast were doing the job of a PR wing that should have been saying what Jagex was supposed to be saying.
Oh, I agree with that.
And I don't like to have to do that. I prefer to keep what we talk about on the commentary of the updates and not how Jagex is doing.
Right.
Because you can have a good update that we like. You can also have a good update that's good mechanically, that we don't like, and I like to keep the conversation on that. But
absolutely,
there have been times where we need to get into the weeds and we need to talk about things like Treasure Hunter. And, you know, the prime example I give is something that happened, I think it was in October or November of last year. You remember when that live stream about Treasure Hunter Mod Mike was on? The thing was a disaster.
And that was after several, like, drops of the ball in a row.
Yeah. And, you know, I rewrote that live stream, and we presented it on the show differently here, and it was completely different on that, and I don't know why that didn't happen there. And it's weeks like that that make me not want to do this. And if it was week after that, my answer to your question would be no. But right now, my answer to your question is yes.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I still love it. I still enjoy it. I'm still playing it, right? So the only difference for me is once I maxed a game, I felt like I couldn't play anything else, right? I'm kind of one of these RuneScape players that when I'm after something, I don't do anything else. So actually being able to max, I felt like I had a little bit of freedom that I could play other things. And so now I'm in this place where I feel like RuneScape is still really enjoyable. It's really fun. I still love it. But I don't have to spend every day on it. It's like, you know how you have a really good friend and you just know him so well. It's like, you might not talk to him for a month. You pick up the phone and you just pick up right where you left off,
yeah,
kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
that's how I am with RuneScape at this point. And I like it. I think it's a good place to be.
Yeah, and you know, I think we're in a position where it looks beautiful. The mobile client works very well as a beta on iOS, even with our old iPhone 8s, 8 pluses. So hardware-wise, aside from the Mac, it's great. Update-wise, I think we're starting to hit our stride again. And community-wise, that's as good as ever. So I think the answer to your question has to be yes.
Yes.
I don't know.
I love the first stage one, too.
Yeah,
once again,
yeah.
Learn so much.
Yeah, very good videos. But with that, I think we can move on. And if you guys want to send your own questions in, email them, questions@rsbnb.com. Leave us a DM or mention us on Twitter or visit update.rsbnb.com/ask. Thank you, everybody, for your questions. All right. iPhone week. Have you been persuaded to move away from the 8 Plus form factor yet?
Not until that article comes to be that you sent me.
About the iPhone SE Plus.
Yeah. I will not move until then. Will not move.
Apple,
I mean, unless I have to.
Right.
Apple
has announced the iPhone 12, iPhone 12 Pro, and the iPhone 12 mini. The iPhone 12 mini, of course, being a 5.4-inch device that puts it size-wise between an old iPhone 5S and a modern iPhone SE or iPhone 7 or iPhone 8. Only 5.1 inches tall and weighs 133 grams. And all of the phones this year, from the Mini all the way up to the Pro, have OLED displays. So you're not getting shortchanged buying an iPhone 11 like you did last year and getting a crappy LCD display with less resolution than our 8 Plus. So that's nice. Top-in-class chips, top-in-class camera for Apple. I think the Pixel still beats out the camera on their front with this. And with this, the pricing on these starts, Apple feels that the 12 is going to be the main one that people buy. But the 12 mini starts at $699 US and comes in a variety of colors.
Yeah. I guess if you want a small phone, that's great. I like mine. I hate. I wouldn't want anything smaller than that. I mean, the 12 sounds like a good phone, though. Like, and they, what is it with the even year, the even numbers? It seems like those are the best phones.
Yeah.
I had my 6 forever. Now I have my 8 forever. I had a 4 forever, but I didn't, a 5 I never liked very much. Didn't like 7 very much.
Yeah, I had the 5S with Touch ID. You know, there's just something out there. And I think it was on the podcast at some point. I said once upon a time the iPhone I would jump up and down about is an old style iPhone 5S with an edge-to-edge display and no buttons on it. And this is this.
I was going to say that sounds kind of like what you got there.
The only thing that is holding me back is that there's no Touch ID.
Oh.
Is
it just the face?
It's just the facial recognition.
I don't like that. It feels too Minority Report for me.
I don't know. I'm not decided yet. I'm not decided yet because I think it's a pretty compelling device. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm not there yet, but you know, I have until November 6th to decide because that's when the mini goes on pre-order. But another fun little thing with this is that they are now embedding microscopic bits of ceramic into their glass to increase its durability so it doesn't shatter as easily.
Well, that's good.
And of course, nobody's got their hands on it yet, so we don't exactly know how strong it's going to be. So it could just be all marketing lingo and whatnot. Another thing that
don't want to pull an Elon,
right? What was that happened? They threw a rock at his.
They threw a rock at his Cybertruck,
and it broke the window. Right?
Yeah, it went right through it.
That wasn't supposed to
bulletproof
happen.
Bulletproof glass. Yeah, well, it's not rock proof.
These phones also all support 5G. If that's available in your market.
You trying to give us the COVID now, Shane?
Yeah. There's also another thing that Apple did with this. They no longer ship with a charger or headphones.
What?
Yeah. They ship with the Lightning to USB-C cable, but they don't actually ship with the charging brick or the headphones. Apple says that this is to reduce costs and to be more environmentally friendly because they can increase or decrease the size of the box, which means they can ship more phones in a shipping crate, which means they need to ship less crates, which means less planes, which means less emissions.
Which means you got to go to the Apple Store and buy your charger and with a whole other box, and that's all bunch of shit.
Or they're just assuming that you already have that Lightning to USB cable.
As expensive as Apple products are, for them to go and tinker and take away things, like, come on. Seriously. You're already paying, what'd you say, $6.99 for the Mini?
Yep.
And you can't throw in a charger with that. You can't throw in a charger with that $700? Okay.
And at that same price point, you get a flagship Pixel 5 from Google. Mm-hmm. And if you want to go cheaper, you can get a Pixel 4A.
Another platform.
No, I know. I'm just saying that as an option. But
yeah, no, but you're right. I mean, if Android continues on, or Android continues to increase, like, it has been getting better. I've been seeing more and more videos about their accessibility now. So watch it, Apple. I mean, seriously. Can't do that.
Yeah.
Can't charge more and give people less.
The Pro Max will be $10.99 for 128 gigs of storage. So if you wanted the same size phone as your 8 Plus, you would be paying $10.99 US minimum.
Yeah, well, I figured that's what it would be. I mean, the last one was the same range.
Yeah. And see, this is the thing. This is the thing. We're at this point where these things are just commodities at this point. Google is severely undercutting them. You can go buy the Samsung flavor of the month as well. Mm-hmm. And the reason you're going to buy a new iPhone is that your old iPhone is like an iPhone 7. Like I said, I'm not even considering doing this because it doesn't even have Touch ID. Or you're sticking in the Apple ecosystem.
Yeah.
Or you just want to move to the Apple ecosystem. These things are commodities at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think, I don't know. I would guess a lot of users are like me that it's just either wrapped into their plan or they lease it at a lower.
Exactly. You know what I mean? And when it's time to get a new phone, you get a new phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
The iPhone 12 starts at $7.99, but only if you're on AT&T or Verizon in the U.S. If you're on anyone else, it'll be $8.29. There's that little nibble built into it, too.
They're not a monopoly, though, Shane.
I don't know. There's also a thing where I just like the button rather than the swipey thing to go home, you know?
Yeah, I do.
So, I don't know. Next piece of tech news, they also announced a HomePod Mini, a $99 smart speaker if you're in the Apple ecosystem, to, of course, get in the Google and Alexa style of market. But anyways, that's a thing. And one interesting thing I saw with that is there's actually something now called Apple Intercom, where, you know, all HomePods, all watches, all Macs, all iPhones will be able to act as an intercom device. So if you're a family, the example they give is that you'll be able to say, "Hey Siri, intercom whoever," and it will broadcast that message out to everybody else in your home.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And, you know, Amazon apparently already has that feature. So that's just another copy of Siri lagging behind.
But, really? I didn't know we had that.
Yeah, you do. Cool. You probably just need to install the skill or whatever it's called.
Yeah, okay.
Next piece of tech news. Xbox game streaming has found a way to come to iOS despite Apple's restrictions.
Oh.
Xbox game streaming will arrive on iOS in 2021 using the web browser.
Uh-huh. Does this mean I wonder if I can do Apple TV then, right?
I mean, you might be able to AirPlay it from your phone.
Okay.
But I don't know that it would come on the Apple TV natively. And, you know, this is something that...
Oh, I could cast from the iPad, though, too. Right.
Yeah, and this is something that really, you know, pissed Apple or pissed Microsoft off, is that Apple's App Store requirements on this. And, you know, they had to be there because Amazon is going to be there as well on iOS. So Microsoft has found a way to bring it. xCloud to Apple, despite Apple's major objections.
Yeah, this is all going to need to be litigated, and I think of the state of that, and I just put my head down and go, "Well, here's my money. I want someone's taking it."
It's a big question. But, you know, you could just, of course, instead purchase a PS5 or an Xbox Series X.
Oh, you know what? I don't have to worry about that, huh? Because I'm going to do that bundle, that Xbox S.
Yeah, you get the hardware and that's no problem.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah. But based on a market research study in the United States of U.S., customers who have pre-ordered a next-gen console, it is overwhelmingly slanting towards the side of the PlayStation 5. It's estimated that 72% of next-gen pre-orders were the PS5, while 29% said that they were tried to pre-order but were not able to. 30% for the Series X, 10% for the PS5 Digital Edition, and 8% for the Xbox Series S. And, you know, this is a market study.
Mm-hmm.
So don't put all your eggs in this basket, but it's an interesting way of seeing...
Well, and it's pre-ordering. I mean, that's just a certain slice of people.
Yeah, it's interesting seeing how people are doing this because, you know, when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, it's really hard to say what this is going to be. I doubt it will be that high of a split. But maybe I'm just living in a silo, because I think most people I know are on the Xbox side.
Yeah, and I always was on the PlayStation side until I got into the kind of PC ecosystem and PC gaming. And now I think if I go back to a console, it will be Xbox, because there's just too much value with Game Pass. And there's just too much. Plus, for some reason, once again, Shane, like... the odd number PlayStations, I don't think held up. Like the PS2, it's one of the best selling console of all time, next to maybe the Wii, I think. But PS3, not as impressive. PS4, super impressive. And I'm still running a PS3, like all these years later, so.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Also, for the bulk of people who pre-ordered the Microsoft consoles, the main reason they did it was to play Halo Infinite.
Oh, that makes sense. Ooh, they're doing some great stuff with Halo and accessibility.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Perfect game franchise. Perfect game franchise. But
I'm very impressed with what they're doing.
And you know, it's just that, the integration with Windows, and I think that's what sells Xbox for me, and that's why I'm a bit surprised that it seems to be slanting this much on the side of the PS5.
Well, I think it's just that the PS4 did so well. I mean, I really look for this. This is PS3 all over again. Like, everyone had to have one because PS2 was so good.
Right.
And then we got it, and we had all wished we had gotten Xbox One at that point? No,
360.
Yeah, I so wish I had gotten a 360 instead of my PS3. Because I was living off of the glory of the old PS2, you know, like that.
Right.
I think that's what it's going to be this year. We'll see.
And the old Xbox 360 doubled as a space heater as well.
It did.
Alrighty, that's it for Tech News this week. We're going to move on to Achievements of the Week. Starting off on the 14th, we have Sio Aces with 99 Construction. Wiki 86 with 99 Defense on the 14th as well. Daydreamer with 99 Fletching on the 13th. Zant got 99 Agility on the 13th. Legion 1943 with 120 Constitution on the 13th. Jag3 Dagster got 99 Invention on the 12th. New Hero got 120 Farming also on the 12th. Spooky Skells got 99 Defense on the 12th as well. And Potato got 120 Invention on October 11th.
Nice. Well, then we have Rasta back at it again with 120 Summoning on October 11th. Then we have Love Natural with 99 Construction on October 10th. We have Mind with 120 Farming. There you go, Shane, on October 10th. On our very own Sirion with 99 Archaeology, October 9th. It's official. I've been beat by everybody. Yay. Congratulations, Sirion. And we have Love Natural again with 99 Woodcutting on October 9th. Love Natural with 99 Cooking on October 9th. And One Rib with 99 Fletching on October 8th. And then The Lion with 120 Archaeology on October 8th. Nice. Very good, guys.
Nicely done all around.
Very cool.
All right, pick of the week time. And, you know, we're recording this on Thursday the 16th. It is the premiere date for the new season of Star Trek Discovery, which, of course, has been a pick of the week before here on the podcast. But I figured I'd go this week with the pick of the week of the newest Star Trek series that just wrapped its first season up last week, and that is the animated show known as Star Trek Lower Decks. And, you know, this one took a bit of time to get used to for me because, one, I've never watched an animated show like this. Two, I had concerns that it was created by the people who made Rick and Morty. Three, I was concerned that it might not be appropriate within the age or within the vein of what Star Trek typically is, given that it's animated, rated TV-14 and whatnot, and so on and so forth. But I warmed up to it over the span of the 10 episodes or so. I think it took about 3 episodes for that. And, you know, you could look at it as a non-serious form of Star Trek. That's one way of looking at it. But another way of looking at it is that this is the Star Trek series that continues off where Star Trek Nemesis left off. It takes place in the 2380s, so it is that continuation of the Next Generation era. But I think what the fans of old Star Trek are going to take away from this the most is that there is a ton of fan service to pretty much anything that was brought forward in the first incarnation of Star Trek. And it doesn't mock it. It loves it. It iterates on it. And it spits it out in a way to the fans that the fans will enjoy. And I could go into spoilers for the last few episodes about what exactly some of these are, but they are off the edge in terms of showing the creators showing the fans that, you know, they understand Star Trek, and it's something that is an institution, is I think an easy way of putting it. And that's why it's pick of the week. I was really amazed with the last three or four episodes of the season on there in terms of what they did, and the fact that it was, you know, the standard week to week Star Trek, not the serialized that we saw in Discovery or Picard, and it still maintained to, of course, the Star Trek core ethos. And we also had some fun little cameos along the way.
Cool. Well, maybe I just gave up a little too quick. I saw about half of one episode. I'm like, I don't know if it's for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me it picked up around the third episode or so. It took a few episodes to get into it, and I wasn't even sure if I was going to continue after the first episode, honestly. But that's why I waited so long to do this as pick of the week.
Well, that's good, though, if it keeps it light. I mean, I always enjoy a nice animated show once in a while.
Yeah. And, you know, lots of fun little references in and out here and there. You know, they got references going all the way back to the original series, Enterprise, Next Generation, DS9 and whatnot. And even some Star Trek fandom memes managed to creep into the episodes as well. So.
Oh, cool. Well, I bet it's rich with the Easter eggs.
Oh, it really is. It really is. Yeah. That's one thing that it does really well. And, of course, that's on CBS All Access, where you can find all the other Star Trek stuff in the U.S. Also, Canada, CTV, Sci-Fi. And I'm not sure when international audiences are getting this, unfortunately. It's not on Netflix or Amazon like Picard was. So,
very cool.
That's the pick of the week, Star Trek Lower Decks. What have you been up to this week?
A lot of archaeology. So when I did the yak, or I'm working on the yak track, and I hit 39, and 39.
Oh, you're ahead of me now.
875K archaeology, and that's a lot where I'm at. So we've been working on that literally most of the week. I'm only about 50K away now, but yeah, that's taken a while.
Okay. Yeah. Anything else?
No, I mean, it's cool, though. I mean, like I said, I hit 96 literally while we were doing the show, and you know, I'll be ready for Orthyn, so that'll be a nice
yeah, that boost. Starts at 90.
Yeah, so I should be able to get into it at least.
I'm currently on task 39, and my task 39, being level 110, is 1.1 million XP.
Oh, ouch. Yeah. That's pretty hefty.
Yeah, and then it gets more cringe after that, and I think I might need to invest in buying a bond or two.
Good luck.
For some skips, but as for me this week, Yak Track, that has been driving what I have been doing in RS. I have made it all the way, like I said, yet to Yak Track 39, and that's effectively what I've been up to. So if you look back at the last 10 Yak Track tasks or so, that's what I've been doing. I think there was a day or two where I said, you know, let's just take an archaeology day and go do some archaeology, and I managed to get 110 off of that, so that's good. I completed the collections for the Zamorak artifacts at 110, and 110 is also where you unlock the ability to finish Red Rum 2 for Tetracompass pieces. So I'm going to have a boatload of Tetracompass pieces coming in once I start farming that archaeology spot.
So nice.
110 is a very good archaeology level. You need to porter it, but when I say good, I mean good that you can complete collections and the like. So.
Right.
But no, aside from that, you know, just been preparing show stuff here, and we're doing this one a bit earlier than normal because after this, I'm going to go watch Star Trek Discovery. Season 3
starting. That's exactly right. I'm getting the kid in bed, I'm grabbing something to eat, and we are going to find out what happens.
It's been 18 months since we last saw this because it ended in April of 2019.
And on a cliffhanger. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Well, it's the virus that did it, honestly.
Yeah, I'm sure. Luckily, it wasn't as bad for me because I just finished it like a month ago.
So. Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, but it did leave on a cliffhanger. I'm like,
Well, the cliffhanger in season 2 kind of looks like the setup for the new Strange New World show. Honestly.
Oh yeah, I did. I did hear about that one. That's,
with Pike and Spock and number one.
Yeah, that's going to be so cool.
All right, we are heading into Star Trek update, so I think at that point it's time to end this episode of RSB&B update. If you guys want to subscribe to the podcast, which will deliver this automatically to you, just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, practically anything. You name it, just visit update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. We're also on YouTube at youtube.com/rsbnb. Subscribe there. Get the full episodes and the nibbles delivered automatically to you. And with that, we'll see you guys next week for the launch of the Orthon Dig Site.
Take care.